Welcome to In and Out of Character, a role players podcast, where I, your host, Mr. Allen, go out, ask people to come on my show, and just yap with them for about an hour about role playing. So, before we actually get into this, my audio, and I don't know what it is, I don't change it. It must be like where I position my chair, because it has been just goofed up lately. I don't know why. It happened in the last episode, it happened in this episode, and I fixed it the best I could to where I think it's an okay level to listen and enjoy it to, but like it was picking up my chair, it's picking up the background audio, just so much, and I don't know what's happening. I haven't messed with the gain, and it stays in the same position. So please bear with me. I believe I got it fixed. To go ahead and get into what we talked about today, Helix came on from RPG Major, and they gave me advice on like improv, and they talked to me about storytelling and things like that. They talked to me about a lot about their podcast, and I think you're really going to enjoy this one. All right, let's go ahead and get in.
RPG Major is an actual play like no other.
Welcome to Snapdragon Landscaping and Investigations.
I know you guys handle mysteries that are non-standard.
I think that one of my coworkers is a changeling.
I was conjured. I am the Pirate King Fabio from the books.
You're not asking the questions that normal people ask.
Can I do a quick check to figure out if this man is a ghost and doesn't know it?
Sure. I'm gonna need a discipline check.
Oh no!
Give me a... Actually, if your song about this is good enough, it'll just happen. So make it a good one.
Cause it's not just magic tricks. This creature is dead.
That's right. It's a musical, but all the songs are made up on the spot.
You're not lying to me.
You've seen me try to lie.
Now raise your voice and take your place in this world.
I never wanted to hate you. I never wanted you to be gone. You have to understand that I don't know how much I can even trust you right now. Do you know why I even came here today?
I lost you.
Mystery, storytelling with heart, and new songs every week. Subscribe to RPG Major.
Hey, Helix, it is nice to meet you. We have never spoken before except in one Discord, and I have no idea what you do. So could you possibly tell me what you do?
For sure. Island, it's great to meet you as well. So my name's Helix, he, him pronouns. I'm an improviser, improv comedian, and teacher based out of the Seattle area. And I host a podcast called RPG Major, which is an improvised musical plus actual play mystery. We sort of solve Scooby-Doo-ish mysteries while improvising songs. And it kind of starts off really lighthearted, but the players are such strong actors and such heart-filled people that it's been a really lovely evolution from, hey, we're kind of running around and having somewhat madcap antics to, oh, we're telling stories about kindness and bravery in a world full of darkness, and building these rich emotional landscapes between the players and between players and their, you know, family members, which I get to play as the game master. Mm-hmm. And so just it has grabbed the handful of listeners that we have so hard that, you know, we have a small but passionate listener base, and mm-hmm. and one of my cast members will tell me, nope, I need to say viewers, because even though we're an audio only podcast, she decided that is what our listeners are called. They're our viewers.
It's so difficult because, like, when I'm talking to people about the podcast, or like, how many viewers do you got? How many followers do you got? And I have to be like, well, it's not really followers or viewers. It's not really listed like that. It's more listed in for like as downloads and or listens or something like that. So I definitely get where you're coming from on that.
And I want to come back to your podcast, but one of the things I like to ask people when they come on this show is how did they initially get into role play?
Yeah. I was raised in the generation where, you know, if you were playing Dungeons and Dragons, which was the only RPG that anyone had ever heard of at that point, you were probably, you know, going to be out in the woods and sacrificing your little brother to summon a demon or something like that, right?
Yep.
Peak satanic panic time. Mm-hmm. So didn't really have any exposure to it as a kid. Had, you know, one group of friends who played in college, and they invited me to try it out with them, but it was sort of during a farewell game as their group was about to break up, and they didn't really... The game master didn't really prep me in any meaningful way and was sort of surprised and a little bit grumpy when I showed up and was a new player chaos gremlin, because I didn't know the rules, didn't know the, you know, social conventions. Like, I just didn't understand the social contract of it. And so I was just causing trouble that whole session. But I was having a great time, probably while ruining everybody else's fun. And then, you know, fast forward probably 5-6 years, moved to Seattle, started going to, you know, the PAX conventions, which started out here, and seeing people play on stage was like, oh, that looks like a lot of fun. And so got together with my brother and a group of other guys who he knew, and started playing weekly. You know, jumped into Pathfinder basically immediately because that was the most popular system at that point. And since then have, with that group and at other groups and at conventions and, with, you know, podcasts and on and on and on, have sort of explored, certainly not exhaustively, but have, you know, gotten to play and run over a dozen different systems and, just enjoy the ability to, you know, they say that a reader lives 1,000 lives. And I think a role player doesn't quite live 1,000, but the ones that they live, they get to inhabit and sit in for you know, longer and with more depth than someone who's, you know, powering through a novel. So it's been a real core part of my life for a long time at this point, right? My first solid friend group in Seattle was that game group.
Right.
And I'm still friends with with almost all of them at this point.
Oh yeah, I'm still friends with a lot of the people I first started off with. But I say that, really, I'm still friends with like a chunk of them, but there's also, you know, quite a few that I don't talk to anymore. Why I brought this up, I don't know why. So forgive me. Sometimes I just start chatting and I don't think about the words coming out of my mouth.
I'm with you. I fall into that, like, okay, well, I want to be actually precise about what I'm saying. And so if I say something that's 90% true, I feel like I need to address the 10%. But
that follows me into role-playing to this very day where I'm like, I have to be as precise with my conversation as I possibly can be, just so there's no, like, doubt what I'm doing, etc. I don't know why I do it like this, but I am. I do this all the time with everything. And I wish I could break out of it.
I mean, it seems like a pretty harmless behavior, Island.
Sometimes I worry if it drives people up a wall, if that makes any sense. Sometimes I worry that... Have you ever been mid-part of a conversation and you're like, you're saying something and you realize as you're saying something, like, that's all it needs to be, like... Like that, you could have just leave it right there, but you're going the extra mile to add on a little bit more information that does not matter at all to the person you're talking to. And you're just like, well, I can't stop, so here I go.
And you just, you're dying a little bit inside as you see them checking out of the conversation.
Yep, that happens to me quite often, and I hate it. But I wanted to ask you... on the topic of the satanic panic, like, did that stop you? Did that make it hard for you to get into it? Because you started getting into it at the peak and you had friends who invited you. Did Did that cause you any sort of like hesitation?
Oh, sorry. Let me clarify. So, Satanic Panic was probably when I was in like elementary and middle school, and the first drop-in game that I joined was when I was in college. So probably a solid decade in between those.
Maybe a little bit more
because I worked for a while before going to school. Yeah.
And I can understand like some people's fears way back when, because you know this is a weird like people are doing this weird hobby and weird things are happening out there, and it, like it's not as open and provided as it is today. So like when someone says, "Oh, I really wanted to get into it, but I was nervous." I mean, I can understand why. It's a whole scary world out there. How did you go from just going into D&D and, or I'm sorry, Pathfinder and all that. How did you go from there to the podcast?
Once I started playing RPGs, I really didn't want to stop. But, you know, the fact of the matter with living adult lives and trying to schedule with an adult game group is you don't always get to play, right? Somebody has a kid, somebody gets married, somebody takes a trip to Europe for 3 months, and your regular game group just isn't there for a while. And so at some point I started, and probably pretty close to when I was like going to PAX and seeing the Acquisitions Incorporated crew play live on stage, I was like, I wonder if there's podcasts that do this. And so I've, you know, for a long time now, have been a voracious listener of RPG podcasts, of actual plays. I'm trying to remember where I started. Probably the first one that I listened to a bunch of was a show called Critical Hit, which was, I think is still being produced and, you know, was a big show, probably still is. And then, you know, found Glass Cannon not too long after they started, and had been listening to One Shot and Campaign for a while. And so One Shot really made me curious about learning more systems and getting to play in different styles and with more variety. It was also actually one of the things that made me want to do improv, because so many of the people who were playing on that show and playing in a style that I wanted to play in were improv comics. And so, you know, the through line for me was listening to actual plays, to taking improv classes, to performing improv, to creating an actual play show so that I could perform the kind of improv that I really want to, which is to say, improvised musical theater. Right. So that I have a venue that will always be available to me. This is a bit selfish, if I'm quite honest, that I will always have a venue that's available to me to perform. And obviously it takes so much more than just performing to create a quality podcast, especially when you have music involved, because you're not just trying to get people's voices polished, but you're trying to make, you know, the accompanist sound good. You're trying to blend the voices well, because it's not a matter of, okay, just cut out whoever's not talking. You know, a lot of the time, everybody's singing, they're in harmony. You need to feature the melody most and the harmony kind of in the background. And on and on and on, and all of that without losing the guitar. And all of that without getting too far from the baseline volume that you established during the talky bits. So it's been this sort of satisfying artistic project and crunchy, meaty technical endeavor as well, and sort of learning the skills of an audio engineer at the same time. Long rambling answer to say, you know, started listening to actual plays, did a bunch of improv, started improv to get better as a game master, and very quickly the two switched places for me, where RPGs became practice for doing improv instead of the other way around. Like one was scratching the itch of the other more than you know, using improv to train for game mastering. But after building good community within the improv scene here, you know, finding some players who I really wanted to perform with regularly, and then being able to build something not just for myself, but also to create these rich stories that we have done has been really great.
I get that. I'm sorry. I've learned that the words "I get that" is one of my audio tics, and I'm sorry. I'm going to say that quite a bit.
That's quite right.
What I understand is that I also have done this for myself. I started this podcast just for me, myself, and I. Like, I wanted to just go out and talk to people. I wanted to really get into the weeds, as it were. Not the saying the weeds just puts just such a negative. What's the word?
Connotation.
Connotation. Thank you.
Is that what you're looking for? Yeah.
Yes. Today's word brought to you by Helix. I wanted to get out into the community and really just talk to people, and I had to have a reason to do that. So I came up with this podcast so I could go out and do it. And I'm happy to say I've had the chance and the pleasure of talking to a great deal of wonderful and awesome people so far, and it's just been a blast. So I can completely understand where you're coming from, where you're like, I just built this for myself. I did it too.
Yeah. And, you know, I suspect we both took the approach of, okay, if I'm going to take all the time to do this, I'm going to make it something that is as good as I can make it, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to put in the work to make it, something that people will want to listen to.
I've started to do that recently.
Necessarily, but yeah.
I started doing that recently because, like, you can tell, like, if you go back and you listen to my early episodes, like, you can tell that I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Like, I knew that I wanted to talk to role players, but I didn't know how, like the very first episode, I had someone come on and they just talked to me about their character, right? Which is fine. I'm okay with that too. But I really wanted to know more about, like, how people are involved in the role-playing community, and I wanted to know how they just interact with not only themselves but those around them. Well, anyways, so you were talking about how you structured your show. So, like, how did it start at the beginning, and, like, where is it now?
Yeah, so it started off as short, and in, you know, actual play terms, short means 3 to 5 or 8 episodes, short arcs that were all completely disconnected mysteries, right? You could drop in on any arc and you wouldn't be missing any context for anything. So you could listen to a mystery in, you know, 3 or 4 hours once they were all released and walk away and be satisfied. But, you know, it's just the nature of role-playing games. And also once we sort of discovered who these characters are and started building out the world around them, it turned into this, you know, it still maintains the arc structure. But if you think about shows like, you know, X-Files is a classic example of this, where it's still kind of monster of the week format, but there is an overarching season arc behind it, right? Where you get 45 minutes in a 50 minute show, you get 45 minutes of Monster of the Week and 5 minutes of Smoking Man, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, the Smoking Man mystery sort of permeates the whole thing and ties it all together. And so that quickly became an important part of the show for me, so that I didn't feel like I was always just scrambling to create a new mystery, but also to build higher stakes for the characters. And make sure that they had both short and long-term goals to pursue, short and long-term story hooks to follow. Really happy with the way that has gone, because when you play with professional actors whose their passion is inventing stories, like narrative stories on stage, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to rewind a little bit. In Seattle, there's a format that's very popular. It's called a narrative show, where it's basically a, 60 to 90 minute improvised play. I see a little bit of that in Chicago, and I've seen just a whisper of it in LA. I haven't spent enough time in New York to know their scene, but in other cities, there seems to be much more focus on, short form and what's called long form improv, where you might do a format that has some callbacks and loose ties between scenes, but you're not just creating a single story with a clear protagonist. That narrative structure is really popular here in Seattle, and the people who love to do it have gotten really good at it. And so bringing those actors in to this show means they just want to dig deeper and deeper into their characters and figure out how to tell the best stories with them. And so when you put a hook in front of a player like that, they're just going to dive in head first, right? And sort of throw caution to the wind. And so over the course of, we're recording the sort of finale arc that ties together all the Smoking Man mysteries of our first season right now. Mm-hmm. We have two main PCs in the group, and one has been following this corruption arc, sort of letting her power take more hold over her, right? Mm-hmm. And accepting the negatives of using her power in order to get the short-term gain of benefiting her power, or of benefiting from her power. So she's kind of been exploring that and finding where the limits of that for her character are. And we'll see if she has a redemption arc after the corruption. But the corruption arc has been really fun to follow. The other main character has been following not exactly a parallel path, but a similar temptation, right? Mm-hmm. Where she had something important in her life that she lost, and the sort of temptation to get it back would require her leaving her current life to get it, right? And so it's like, all right, we're gonna put these hooks over here and let you follow them as players. And I don't need to be so coy about what these things are, right?
Right.
The first character is a siren, like from Greek mythology, and mm-hmm. the sort of use of her power comes along with a hunger for using her power more. And the other main character is a former fairy queen. Imagine someone who went to Narnia and became queen and lived her whole life there, except in a sort of fey realm, and then returned to Earth, but in the child's body that they left in, and had to return to sort of mundane life. And so now, as an adult, she's sort of looking for evidence of magic and looking for ways to get back to that fey realm. And so those two sort of parallel arcs and seeing how differently the characters play off of them has been the sort of driving factor. Plus, of course, the driving force behind all of the season arc business in this show. Plus, of course, some, threats to their family and loved ones and classic villain things who find heroes and have their lives disrupted by those heroes and then seek to make the heroes no longer a threat by being manipulative and mildly evil to moderately to majorly evil,
Yeah. To kind of go back on something you said earlier, you talked about talking with a bunch of professional actors and stuff like that. What is that like, if you don't mind me asking? Because when I reach out to people, no matter who it is, right, I'm always so nervous and scared to talk to them. But that quickly goes away once I start talking to them. But sure. I can only imagine what it must be like to get a professional actor to come onto your show to play a part. What's that like?
So, professional actor in Seattle, it sort of has a different level of stakes to it.
Okay.
Right. I use the term professional actor for anyone who has been paid to act on stage, because that's what a professional actor is. Right?
Right.
In Seattle, there's no movie industry. There's no TV. Right. There is a vibrant theater scene and vibrant musical theater scene and vibrant improv theater scene. But the people who perform with me regularly, right, my two main characters are played by people who are part of the improv scene around Seattle. And so there are people who either I had seen perform many times, and in the case of Camilla, who plays Aubrey, who is the fairy queen character, right, I'd seen her perform many, many times. I was just blown away by what she does, and had, you know, spoken to her socially on many occasions, and we're just part of the same community. And then Lauren, who plays Mara, who's the siren, right? She and I performed together and just had this fantastic stage chemistry. And even though, right, she is without question a much, well, let me rephrase this. Even though she is someone who, right, she is making acting her career, right? She performs in musical theater around Seattle at the big playhouses where you can actually make a living doing so. She also loves improvising musical theater so much that, and again, our chemistry when we performed together and our friendship that grew out of that has been, or was enough for me to feel very comfortable approaching her. And so your question, how do I approach professional actors? The ones who are in Seattle and part of my community, I find less intimidating just because they already have that humanized level that you find once you've reached out to them and talked to them and like, oh, right, this doesn't need to be stressful. You know, when I've reached out to hosts of other shows that I listen to, then I get a little bit more stressed for sure.
Yes, but yeah.
Rely on a structure that Rowan, who runs, gosh, what is her last name? I've lost her last name right now. I'm not Rowan, who runs, or one of the people who runs Rascal News, sort of laid out for, hey, here's how you reach out to someone that you want something from in a way that is, you know, not dehumanizing for either of you, in a way that shows that you sort of put some thought and care into this. And so taking her advice and sort of structuring reach outs in a way that's like, hey, I'm Helix. I run this show. I'm reaching out. First of all, thank you for creating X, right? This thing that you created that I really appreciate. And so when I reached out using her own format to reach out to Rowan to be like, hey, you want to cover my show? It's like, hey, Rowan, first of all, really appreciate the fact that you are one of a few outlets who are still covering the RPG space as a journalist. You know, I have discovered some actual plays that I really love through your service. So it's just like, start with a compliment, be like, hey, here's my thing. Pitch it in two or three sentences so that you're not taking a lot of their time. Would you be interested in talking more about this? Right. End with a clear ask, but like start with gratitude. End with a clear request, make the whole thing short. And then even if they say no, you know, you can be pretty confident that you've not wasted a bunch of their time. And frankly, I've gotten more yeses than nos while using that reach out method. So
I need to start doing that because, man, I am bad at talking with people over text messages. Like, I get so... Here's an example. I had someone on, their episode not released not too long ago, and they approached me about possibly their wife coming on to the podcast, who likes to play D&D and who also is a VTuber. I think VTubing is very cool. I think that the whole culture around that is pretty fascinating, and I pretty much just went right into trying to get them onto the podcast, and I realized that I didn't actually take the time to talk to them first, and I feel so bad about it, but I was just so excited to get them on the podcast. Like, for instance, I have someone else coming on. They do role playing in VR chat. They're going to be coming on the podcast, and thankfully they agreed. But like, all I did was just found them. I found them via YouTube. Like I saw their YouTube channel, and I just left them a message in the comment section. Like I didn't know how else to reach out to them. I looked for any other links and stuff like that to talk to them. And ultimately, I didn't even leave a way for them to get in contact with me. I was like, hey, I think this is pretty neat. I would like to have you come on my podcast. Would you be interested?
Yeah.
And I really need to start taking the time to be like, okay, hold on. Yes, I want to talk to them really badly about this, but like, I need to pull it back and actually have like a conversation before I ask them. Or at least try to have some semblance of a conversation before I try to ask them onto my podcast. I feel like that shoots me in the foot a lot.
I think that's fair. And it is hard to strike that balance when the main reason that you're reaching out is to ask them for something, right? Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense that would be awkward, and it's hard to get that balance right. I'm not saying I do it right all the time, but when I have time to like sit and craft an email reach out, then then that little framework that I mentioned really helps. Oh, and I looked up that video, the like where she lays that out. It's an episode of a show called Above the Table, called How to Get Them to Talk About Your Thing. And I'll send you a link to this if you're curious.
Oh, I'd be more than curious. I am more than willing to absorb all the knowledge that I possibly can.
And so Rowan Zioli was that journalist's name who works, is like one of the people who runs Rascal Media, and I think is one of the game designers behind Heart and Spire, which are two pretty rad games.
A private investigator heading up the case.
Only one thing comes to mind. Murder-suicide.
Watson, what the f*** are you talking about?
Please, God, let us keep that in.
A professional wrestler whose blood runs cold.
Oh my God, you really are Elsa. You think they'll let it
go?
Shut
up!
Aubrey, in fact, did not let it go.
A fashion designer haunted by the past.
I'm gonna tap my keys on the window. Do you know who I am?
Comes out like muffled.
An enigma of a woman with a ruthless hunger.
I've never.
No. The fridge is like laying on his back, and me hurdling all the dogs inside single file with like a whistle in my mouth and jump in.
Hold on.
That's what we're doing.
And the city's mayor. Doing his best to pick up the pieces.
He was never... It was in a book written like 100-plus years after the original thing came about where he was depicted as an egg.
Yeah.
Okay, he wasn't an egg originally. I went down a rabbit hole while creating this character.
These five will leave no stone unturned, no lead buried, and will do whatever it takes to keep their city safe.
Okay, you know what? This is probably not relevant, so I'll say... You just think you're right.
Start the broadcast. It's 8-Track Overpass.
8-Track Overpass is a City of Mist actual play podcast. Listen to us every Monday wherever you find your podcasts.
So I have a question for you, sir.
What's that?
I would like your advice. I told you that I'll be going on to possibly, we're still in the logistics part of it, you know, but
the most fun part of any negotiation.
God, don't even get started on fucking. I will say this, anybody out there who is interested in starting a podcast where you talk to other people or you have like multiple people doing it, scheduling is by far the most difficult part of this hobby. It is the hardest part, like making sure you and the other person are aligned and you're using tools that can make it work. Like this morning, I woke up in a panic at like 7:30 because I had it down for 8 a.m. that our podcasts were. No, I'm two hours ahead of you. To me, it's about to be 1 p.m. To you, it's about to be 11.
Right.
Yeah. So, I woke up in a panic, like, trying to get... That's the reason why I sent you messages this morning. So, I woke up in a panic, and I got onto my computer, and, like, I had already had, like, a rough night, so I was, like, ragged and stuff. And then I was like, wait, hold on. And that's what it's like, everybody. Scheduling is the most difficult part of any show, I swear to God. Anyways, so I wanted your advice. As someone who has never done improv, is there like any pointers you would give to me? Because I might be going on to an improv show and I have no idea how to improv other than just to improvise.
Sure. So they're called rules, but they're more like best practices, because like a lot of things, once you know the rules, you can bend and break them successfully. But for someone who's just getting into improv or just trying it out for the first time, right? The thing that I would recommend is trying to be present and listen to what's happening around you, because the thing about improv, whether the game or scene that's happening lasts for 30 seconds or for 90 minutes or for 50 hours because you've made a wild choice and started a podcast with it, you're building a reality collaboratively. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that everybody hears about improv is yes and, right? Right. That's if you've heard sort of one thing, you've probably heard that. And when you really break it down, what that means is you're listening to what's being offered to you by the other people who are doing improv together. And you're picking up those gifts. You're saying, thank you for this. I will live in the world that we are building together. Right. Someone approaches you and says, hey, boss, sorry, I broke the machine that extrudes all of our cinnamon rolls, right? You know that you either work in a bakery or a cinnamon roll factory and that you're their boss. And if you then say, we don't make cinnamon rolls, we make tires, right? Then you're not only breaking the reality for the audience and for the people on stage with you, but you're also rejecting the gift that the other player just made to you of, hey, you don't need to make every decision. You don't need to be in control of everything. We can play together. And the offer of, I've established a relationship between us and put us into a clear and grounded setting, means that if you say yes to that, if you assume the role of their boss in that bakery, then you know what to do next, right? You can be the boss. You can help troubleshoot the thing, and you can sort of progress together down the road much further than you would ever be able to do if you said, we don't sell cinnamon rolls, we sell tires, right? Because you were like holding on to an idea that you had before the scene started. So it's the reason that improv classes are a thing, even though people... You know, I bet if you jumped into a quote improv scene with your son, who you said was six, he would sort of understand the rules instinctively. But for some reason, as adults, we have lost some part of that. And so the thing that you get out of improv classes is untraining a lot of the like need to be in total control, the holding on to an idea beyond when it's useful, instead of holding on to it lightly and letting it go as soon as something contradictory comes up. Because, you know, you might start a scene with somebody else and you might think that, you know, you're the president of the United States. You might think that you're the president of the United States and the other person might think that you're both kangaroos, right? Those both can be true. You can be the president kangaroo. That's a totally valid way to proceed. But if you reject the kangaroo in order to hold on to your president idea, then improv is not happening at its full potential.
I never considered that, because I'm glad I asked you, because man, that must be fascinating to work with during a show like yours. And speaking of your show, I want to go ahead and like just, I think your show is incredibly unique and incredibly very, very cool, if you don't mind me saying. I think that the idea, the idea of taking a taking role playing, and because improv, and feel free, as an expert on improv, feel free to correct me, but I feel like improv is just another form of role playing, or maybe it's vice versa.
Yeah, the Venn diagram is almost a circle.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, like there's so much overlapping because you're always improving. Like I and in MMOs, you're doing play by post with other people, and you're improvising everything that they're doing. Like you can kind of plan ahead, and it doesn't follow the same rules as improv, where you take the gift and you keep on going with the story. Because like sometimes people don't want things happening with their characters, and you don't get to talk to these people out of curiosity. In improv, do you talk with people beforehand? Is there like a session zero for improv?
In a team that is functioning well and is getting ready to perform, every team will have their own sort of pre-show rituals, right? If you are performing with somebody who you, or with a group that you know really well and trust, you might not go into all of this depth, but if you're performing with a new group, or you're sort of taking five people out of a 30-person ensemble and putting a show on, it is advisable to have a sort of short session zero to sort of check in and be like, hey, how's everybody doing today? Are there topic areas that we need to avoid? Are there physical boundaries that we need to express that are different from, you know, what our norm is as a group? Because people have things going on in their lives. If someone has a sick relative, they might have a really hard time if a scene ends up being at a funeral. Or, you know, just to use an example of something that happened at a show for me this weekend. One of the players had his hand bitten by a dog while he was trying to save his own dog from being attacked by this aggressive dog. And so even though the wound was not very visible, he's like, hey, just don't touch my left hand. I'll keep it out of your way. Don't worry about it. But there should be a pre-show check-in for both emotional and physical needs of the players, so that just like at an RPG table, you know, if you know where the boundaries are, you know, you feel very comfortable playing in all of the space that is inside of the boundaries, and you're not going to cross them when you're sort of right. If somebody really doesn't want, you know, clowns mentioned or something like that, then great. If I'm running a horror game and I know that clowns are out of bounds, I'll do something else entirely. Right. Mm-hmm. It's unlikely that you're going to find a spider with clown paint on their face.
Right.
Certainly not accidentally. So yes, to answer your question, you know, I can't speak universally for all teams or shows, but in teams that are healthy, I think that happens regularly.
Because it certainly doesn't. Nothing will stop a scene, and in almost any aspect of role playing, other than crossing a line or a boundary, specifically like you didn't talk about, like. Like, of course, you should never cross a boundary that has been talked about, but it also sucks when you cross a boundary that wasn't talked about, because that's happened to me quite a few times on vice versa, like on both sides of that spectrum, where we have had rules of being like, hey, don't mention this, like XYZ, and someone goes out of their way to mention XYZ. And like that sucks right there, because you're like, well, why? We had a whole thing about it. And then, of course, there are times where you're having a scene with somebody and your character will do something or mention something, and that out of character will affect the other players. And I don't know if anybody out there listening to this is not a role player and just kind of like listening into this, but when you have a character, your character is affected by you out of character. Like, how do I put this without sounding so weird? They call it bleed. A lot of people like to call it bleed, where out of character comes into in character. But sometimes that happens. It's not bad. It's just like, you know, the character, like the player, like my friend, they might be depressed. And so their character is making short responses. And that's fine. You know, that's okay. One of the questions I like to ask on this show, as we get towards the end, is do you happen to have like any advice for role players out there, whether it's like people just wanting to play the game, people who are wanting to get into, you know, role playing with a podcast or something like that?
I can't recommend taking improv classes enough. if you spend a lot of time with it and in that space, our brains are wild. They are adaptable. They can restructure themselves and like repurpose parts of themselves in response to the stimuli that they are given. Right? The sort of classic example of this is someone who becomes blind might sharpen their other senses. That happens because there's literally part of your cortex. Like your cortex is programmable real estate. If it no longer gets visual inputs, suddenly that real estate that was taken up with the visual processing is available to process other information. Right? Our brains literally reconfigure themselves based on what we put into them. And so if you put yourself into this space of openness and saying yes and collaborativeness, it literally changes your brain. It changes how you think. Some would say it breaks your brain, and that's not necessarily a good thing. But in my life and in my role-playing, doing improv intentionally has changed how I approach role-playing hugely, especially as a game master, but even as a player when I occasionally get to be a PC at a table. Mm-hmm. So advice number one, take improv classes if that's in your, like if that fits your life. Because if being a great role player is important to you, the skills, like I said, just overlap, almost making a circle out of a Venn diagram. Piece of advice number two, I would say, is to read as broadly as you can, both in fiction and nonfiction, and in works that are intended for role players, right? Some of my favorite RPG authors are John Wick, who used to write a column that he sort of collated into a book called Play Dirty that informs how I game master hugely. James D'Amato, who writes some of the like ultimate guides to whatever, he just has a great way of condensing and providing a lot of ideas very concisely. But also, you know, reading history, reading fiction, reading memoirs gives you insight into how people live and will give you ideas for characters that you might want to play, because you're encountering these larger than life or truth is stranger than fiction types of situations and characters. You're just giving yourself more material to pull from when you sit down at the table. And my advice, if you want to create an actual play, is think about what you want the show to be and who the show is for. Right? Some people really love the sort of barely edited, just sounds like you're at a table with friends show. Mm-hmm. Some people really crave a, you know, highly polished done by professional actors or voice actors, show with high production value. Those two things are very different from each other, right? What is the show that you're trying to make? What is the story that you're trying to tell? And who is it for? Right? I am thrilled, absolutely over the moon thrilled, right? We're recording this in mid-August of 2025. Not sure when you release or how far ahead you record. My little show, RPG Major, over the last several months, has gone from having, you know, 500 or 600 downloads a month pretty regularly to just almost hockey stick shaped growth recently.
Right. Yeah.
And so like we've had, I think, almost 500 downloads this week. Where,
wow, let's go.
Yeah, it's wild. And I think, you know, it's hard to attribute that to anything other than being really consistent about creating something that is as good as I can make it. And right, as good as I can make it has gotten better over the year that we've been releasing. And that improvement and that consistency has taken so much work.
Yeah, I'm still having an issue with my own problem with the consistency. Because like, I've gotten so many people who are wanting to come onto the podcast now that I want to release like 3 episodes a week. 3 episodes a week is a lot of hard work. But if I don't, then it's going to be like months before some of these people will even see their episode. And I don't want to do that to them. So like, it's one of those give or take relationships, you know what I'm talking about?
You're doing them a favor, though, by letting them onto your show and by giving them a platform and sort of sharing your audience with them and introducing them to your audience, right? They're, you know, I guess I'll speak for myself, right? I'm recognizing that by speaking to you, I'm not only getting to know a pretty rad person, but I'm also getting to talk to your audience at the same time. And you know, I've pitched my show a time or three over the course of this hour that we've been talking, and I'm not ashamed. you know, I want to let people know who I am, and I want to let people know what the show is that I make. And I want to let people know that if you want comedians telling stories with heart and improvising songs that will make you fall over laughing and will make you cry, RPG Major is the show for you, right? Well, and if that message comes out in November, great. I'm still going to be making the show because while I'm thrilled that people are finding my show, I'm making the show because it's the art that I want to make.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the opportunity that I get to collaborate with people I love performing with.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, is the only thing that's going to get you through the hours and hours of work and the slow growth that happens with every podcast that doesn't have a celebrity on it to start with. If you're not willing to put in that work and not willing to have almost nobody listen for a long time, maybe don't make a podcast. Because if you just want a big number under your show of downloads or likes or in whatever it is, right, that's not going to happen for a while. Unless you happen to pull Brennan Lee Mulligan on for some reason.
Yeah.
And if you know him, please introduce me, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There is a video by a guy named Super Eyepatch Wolf, and it talks about YouTube algorithm scam people, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end, he talks a lot about like analytics and stuff like that. Do not look at my analytics. I do not care. That it is not, I don't have social media because I don't care about social media. I hate social media. I'm just now doing the whole social media thing because I feel like I have to, because I want to use this platform to support other people. So I feel like I obligated to kind of get into it just so I can start doing that. But otherwise, like, I have never cared about how many people listen to the podcast because, again, at the end of the day, the only thing I care about is being able to reach out, talk to people, and to share their story among other role players. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hearing you say, I don't want to make people wait to hear their own episodes. It sort of reverberates with a impulse that I have of like, oh, I need to do this for them, and it doesn't matter if I burn myself out doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, oh, I feel that caution and hope, Island, that you're able to keep a good balance for yourself, right?
Where you're... Oh, don't worry. Yeah. I this happened to me before. Don't worry. I swear to goodness to everybody out there listening, to all my friends, to everybody who knows me, I have a tendency to go really hard, really fast, and then burn out super quickly. I promised everyone that I would not do that. And so if I feel like things are getting like a little too much, I start lowering aspects. Like I was taking on 5 guests a week. And then I realized, ooh, 5 guests a week, a little too much. So I brought it down to 3 with a 4th person possibly being like scheduling's kind of like mixed up and I accidentally added one more person a week. I can handle 4 people. Matter of fact, this week I have 4 people coming on the show. But 5, little too much. I recognize that. Yeah. Not a good idea. So I bring that back. Last week was my son's school. Like, he just started school last week. I got really busy with the school. I only released 1 episode last week because I have parental duties. I have to go take care of that. So to make sure I don't burn myself out, 1 episode on Wednesdays. Wednesdays are supposed to be my launch days anyways. The Fridays and the Monday ones are just extras. Matter of fact, I put out 1 today. But, so to kind of like wrap up that part of the conversation, what we're trying to get at is, if you want to start a podcast, understand your limits and adjust your goals accordingly.
Yeah. Can I throw one more thing out there?
Mm-hmm.
As I've like gotten more established as a creator, I've seen the truth in something that I first heard expressed by Ira Glass, and who's if you don't know, the host of This American Life. He said, if you're sitting down to write a book for the first time, you've probably read a lot of books. You probably know what books you like. And when you sit down to write, you're going to recognize that what you're making is garbage because it doesn't line up to the standards that you have. It's not a book that is to your taste because your taste is so much better refined than your writing skills. When I started to create this show, I intentionally reached out to people whose storytelling chops I knew and respected, because I knew they had already gone through the every story that I make is garbage phase of their creation journeys, right? And I did as well, right? I put on some real bad shows as an improviser and did some real bad improv in improv classes. We also were very intentional about recording things that we did not intend to release. Right, you get excited, I was very excited when I like picked up all of the microphones and like a recording interface. It was like, all right, I have all this gear. I should jump in right away. No, I should be intentional and measured, and get good not only at the process of storytelling but at the process of recording. So like we recorded our session 0, and I edited it probably 4 or 5 times, just because I got so much better at each pass. Right, it was in that sort of initial linear progression phase of skill progression.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time that we released our first episodes, right, the first hour of audio that went live to audiences I'd probably edited at that point 40 or so hours of audio, because the skill that I was crap at to start with, having spent all this time developing my storytelling skills, developing my musical improv skills. The skill that I was crap at was audio production, and I got it to a point that I thought was pretty good. And now when I go back and listen to my early episodes, I'm like, ooh, that's a little rough. Even though I think objectively it's not bad, you know?
Yeah.
You were talking about the same thing of like your standards change as your skills change and as your taste evolves. And so if you are wanting to make a podcast and you haven't been making other things first, just know that what you're going to make at first is bad, and think about think about a plan to get good before you start sharing with audiences, because a lot of people are going to, you know, download your episode one and listen to the first 2 minutes. And if they're not in, like if they're not on board in the first 2 minutes, they never engage again, right? They're gone. And you, and like the funnel that led to there, of maybe they saw a social media post that you made, even though you hate posting on social media, maybe they heard a friend recommend it. All of the like unlikely things that had to happen in order for someone to give you a moment of their precious time. If you got crackly audio where it sounds like, you know, you're speaking from the bottom of a well in the first 2 minutes of your show, I'm sorry, friend. There's a lot of things that are vying for my attention. I'm not gonna listen. I'm kind of a snob at this point on what goes into my ears.
So, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, sorry, that was a long rambling one more thing, but
no, it's fantastic. It's, I appreciate
People get discouraged while creating because they're not as good as their taste, and that's so normal. It's so normal.
Well, Helix, thank you so much for coming on to the show, man. I really appreciate you having me on.
Island, thank you for reaching out, for sort of having a platform that you're so generous with, and for allowing me to ramble a bit at you and your audience. And again, thank you for the kind words about the show. We genuinely work really hard at it. And even though I would do things differently now than I did initially, I'm still quite proud of the work that we made, even episode one. You know, we have moments in our first two arcs that I tear up every time I listen to them, every time I sometimes even just like I'm feeling a little misty right now just thinking about the first big songs that define the characters of Aubrey and Mara, and yeah, man, it's cool. There's not a lot. We're certainly not the first people to do music while making an actual play, but I don't think there's anybody else out there who's doing quite what we do.
Right.
And I'm really proud of it. And so thanks again, Island, for giving me an opportunity to ramble about it. And honestly, just to ramble about this hobby that we both love.
And before we cut it, where can everybody find your show at?
Every single podcast app, hopefully. if you find one that it's not on, please let me know. We're at rpgmajor.com. We're on Instagram and TikTok at rpgmajor. That one's still in logistics phase, so I don't want to. Sorry. We have some promos, or not some promos. We have some collabs coming up this fall that I'm really excited about. But they're still in the, like, 95% certain phase, and so I don't want to hype them until they're actually recorded, if that makes sense.
Right. No, I get that, man. There's so much I want to talk about, but because it hasn't happened, let's start ranting. I can't do this. All right, that's it. That's the show. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.